Zero and infinity. They state that zero and infinity are polarities of one.
Yeah.
That sounds impossible. How can nothingness and endlessness both be features of the single unit of existence, the one?
It's tricky language, for sure. They're defined as perceptual chimera that
Yeah.
generate more systemic dynamism.
Perceptual chimeras. What does that mean? Like, they're not
I'm
real.
not quite not real. Think of a chimera like a functional construct, something made of parts that seem incompatible, but it works, it does something. Zero and infinity, in this view, aren't actual places you can reach. They are the perceptual limits that we, or maybe the system itself, uses to define the boundaries of the current one, the current state of existence.
Okay, so they're like conceptual goalposts, defining the playing field for one.
That's a good way to think about it. And crucially, they're not static goalposts. They are what generates the engine of change. The sources talk about a confluence of zero and infinity.
A confluence, meaning they flow together too.
Apparently, and this confluence is inherently dynamic. It's always pushing in one of two directions, either collapsing complexity to become a bigger zero, like resetting potential, or pushing outwards, expanding the boundaries to become a further bigger infinite.
Whoa, so zero and infinity are like these twin pressures, constantly forcing the system's definition of one to either contract or expand.
That's the idea. They are the drivers, making sure the system never just sits still. It's always chasing or reacting to its own perceived limits.
That completely reframes things.
Yeah.
And if that cycle, that push and pull between zero and infinity, is the core of dynamism, that brings us right to death, doesn't it? A concept that feels very central.
Absolutely central. And death gets maybe the most radical redefinition here. It's not seen as an endpoint,
Yeah.
not at all. It's defined as a critical system converter.
A converter,
Right.
like changing one thing into another.
Precisely.
Ooh.
Its specific job, according to the sources, is to take all the accumulated experience, complexity, and existence of a particular one, which they call the one perceptual infinity, and convert it back into one greater zero.
Wait, hold on. Convert the infinite, the fullness of that existence back into a greater zero. Why? Why turn everything back into nothing, basically?
Because that infinity is the maximum complexity achieved within the rules of the current one. If the system just stopped there, it would stagnate. It couldn't evolve further. So converting it back to a greater zero is crucial. That zero represents untapped potential, fresh capacity. By taking all the energy and information from the previous cycle, the perceptual infinity, and turning it back into pure potential, greater zero, the system essentially primes itself for the next round.
It clears the slate, but with more potential than before.
Exactly. And this act, this conversion, it will generate new one with greater perceptual chimeras of a zero and infinity. Death isn't an end. It's the necessary mechanism that fuels the creation of the next, potentially more complex cycle of existence.
Wow. Okay, so then the human tendency the sources mention, trying to preserve genesis, our starting point, and postpone death, maybe by slowing maturation, as they put it, that's like trying to fight the system's core evolutionary
It
mechanism.
seems that way, like we're trying to jam the converter, you know, keep the system stuck on the current level, the current one, because we're attached to its particular perceptual infinity.
We value the current complexity over the potential for future greater complexity.
Which definitely raises a big question, doesn't it? If the whole system is geared towards this cyclical conversion to generate greater complexity, what are we actually achieving systemically by trying so hard on our micro scale to delay that process? Are we inadvertently slowing down the entire evolutionary flow?
That's a heavy thought. Okay, let's make this a bit more concrete. How does this abstract polarization actually show up? The sources talk about primarity versus secondarity and this model NXXN.
Right, these are like the operational roles that emerge from that fundamental O-one, nothing, everything duality. Primarity is presented as the initiating pole. It's linked to concentration. Think gathering, starting, consolidating.
Okay, the inward focus.
And secondarity is the complementary pole, the finishing one. It's linked to dissipation. Think spreading, completing, dispersing, using what was gathered.
The outward focus, and they need each other, right?
Absolutely interdependent. You need both for any kind of dynamic process to happen.
And the sources give some really specific examples to show how deep this goes, like right down to biology.
They do. And these can be controversial, so it's important to remember we're just relaying what the source material claims as structural roles, not value judgments.
Understood.
So, for example, it defines female as primarity, the starter, linked to concentration, representing the consolidation of resources, the potential, often symbolized by carrying the mitochondrial DNA, the mtDNA.
Okay.
And conversely, male is defined as secondarity, the finisher, linked to dissipation. The spreading of genetic material completing the cycle may be linked symbolically to YRNA in this model.
So starter and finish roles based on concentration and dissipation.
That's the framework presented, and it extends this logic right down to the microscopic level we touched on earlier. Bacteria are classed as primarily concentrating, self-replicating.
Building themselves up.
While viruses are secondarily dissipating, needing to use existing resources, host cells, to spread and complete their cycle, often destructively.
Concentrator versus dissipator again.
And what's fascinating, or perhaps illustrative of how universal the sources claim this is they apply the same framework to animals, specifically noting cats versus dogs.
Cats versus dogs. Seriously, how does that fit?
Well, think about it in terms of energy and focus. Cats often embody concentration, conserving energy, focused attention, that inward primarity. Dogs tend towards dissipation, outward energy, seeking interaction, spreading effort, the secondarity pull.
Huh. I can actually sort of see that. It's a very concrete, maybe even slightly funny example, but it does help ground these really abstract ideas. It makes you think about why your dog needs constant walks and your cat just observes.
Exactly. It helps anchor the idea that these aren't just cosmic forces, but might be playing out in very mundane ways, according to this model.
Okay, that example helps. Let's quickly connect this back to the math before we wrap up. The sources use expressions like 0x, 1n to talk about stable versus dynamic states. How does that work?
It's fairly straightforward conceptually. A stable system, one that isn't changing, is represented mathematically by interacting with one feet. So if you have some element, let's call it x, and you divide it by 1, x1, you just get x back. If you have a quantity n and multiply it by 1, n by 1, you just get n back. Nothing changes. The system holds steady.
Stability equals unity. Makes sense. But the whole point of this model is dynamism, change. So how does the math force that?
Dynamism comes from forcing interaction with anything other than one. Non-unity. Any division or multiplication by a number that isn't one creates change. Divide 1 by 0.5, you get 2. Divide 100 by 5, you get 20. Change happens.
Right.
And significantly, the model representing primarity and secondarity concentration and dissipation is explicitly given as NX and XN.
Ah, so that NXN structure isn't just a label. It's the mathematical formula that guarantees the interaction isn't with unity.
Precisely. Unless N and X happen to be identical, which would defeat the purpose of polarity, the relationship is inherently one of non-unity division. It builds dynamism right into the core structure.
It ensures the system can never just settle into that stable X1 all XX state. It has to keep changing.
Exactly. That polarization is the mathematical requirement for constant movement, for evolution. The confluent whole guarantees these poles are always interacting in this NXXN dynamic, preventing stagnation, forcing that cycle of conversion from perceptual infinity back to greater zero, which then sets the stage for the next leap in complexity.
Wow. Okay. Tempting to find the most foundational operation.
The root operation.
Exactly. It suggests, for instance, that powering may be first of the positive ones. Why? Because, for example, 1 is the result of anything power to 0.
Ah, okay. X to the power of 0 is 1.
Right. Which points to the idea that the very concepts of 1 and 0 might be inherently linked to this operation. And it also notes that 1x is the only operation with number 1 that makes sense doing it, suggesting a unique, maybe foundational role for division involving the number 1. But the insight isn't just to pick an operation. It's about trying to find the fundamental logical and mathematical laws like identity, commutation, distribution that actually structure reality itself.
So the laws of math reflect the laws of reality's origin.
It's an invented language discovered.
Yeah, the classic debate.
The presentation offers a really interesting take here. It notes, naturally, we invent math going forward, you know, 1, 2, 3, just a linear progression.
Simple counting.
But then it flips it, suggesting we can also see numbers as being discovered.
Right.
And from that perspective, it claims 1 is more complex than 2, and the lesser prime, the more complex macro.
Whoa.
That's completely backwards to how we usually think about numbers, 1 being more complex than 2.
It absolutely turns our usual mathematical intuition upside down.